For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. 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 For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
Welcome back to the Clinks Moments of Redemption. Known for his Instagram and YouTube videos, Mark Orville, or The Angry Dad, sat down with Brent to talk about overcoming adversity and the three stages of his life.
So you look at life and it's about chapters, right? So your first chapter is growing up. Second chapter was about coming down here to fulfill the dream. The third chapter was dealing with when that dream come to a sudden end. And, you know, how ironic is it that, you know, 20 odd years later, you start to talk about the real third chapter in your life, which was about a really deep and dark place that I was in for nearly 20 years, I reckon. And, you know, the only one that I'd confided in the whole time was just sort of dear old mum and of course, Sharon. So, you know, I just couldn't deal with it, Simo. It's as simple as that.
And of course, he suffered his injury.
And I tried five different surgeons and it was just beyond repair. Accepting the fact that my dream had been taken away from me without delivering on my own expectations and what I set out to achieve. It was about then trying to accept it, and I couldn't accept it. For a period of probably 15 years, my life was hell dealing with all that.
Can you take us on that journey of, you know, I think a lot of people listening will never experience what it's like to have something so amazing as such at the top of your game and then to just have it fucking pulled straight from under you. I spoke to Barry Hall on one of my interviews, you know, and we talked about this, about the athlete sort of hitting a peak and the what after.
Well, the comforting thing is you get to see, or society gets to see and hear about it more these days, and not just across AFL, but across all professional sport, because it's talked about, right? And I think professional sporting outfits are actually now more responsible when it comes to that point in time when that asset is no longer of value to them, that they have an
duty of care
to actually assist them transition into the next chapter of their life. They still are far from perfect with regards to how they do it, but they've come a long way from back in, you know, early 90s when, you know, it hit me head on.
And the thing was too, I mean, we talk about it as men and let's get a little bit dark on the subject. You know, who were you going to fucking tell you're getting depressed and you're down and you know, you're not happy?
No one.
There's so much in place to just turn to someone and say, mate, I'm fucking not okay. And that person these days would have enough knowledge to just go, mate, do you want to have a chat? You would never tell anyone back then that you were fucking feeling like, because you'd look like a weak piece of shit.
Oh, look, you know, I look back at that whole period and I could sort of, I best summarise it as I pretty much lived two lives for 15, 17 years. And I say that because I had an obligation, I had kids young, right? So an obligation to support the family. And that was about creating a career that could actually, you know, finance that, right? And that was about houses and you want holidays and you want kids to go to schools, this, that, and the other. So I would do that. You'd get up and you put on a brave face and you would actually go and do what you needed to do, and whether that was a junior level sales role or as you transition through to more senior roles. And I was running a manufacturing plant that had a couple hundred people and this, that, and the other. But I'd get home and that work persona, so that sort of professional part of Mark Orville, would get parked pretty much immediately. And I was almost a recluse. You know, I'd go into the room, back room, bedroom, whatever, and not want to talk to anyone, do anything.
Yep.
And Sharon ended up doing a lot of things with the kids without me. And I'd be huddled under a blanket down the back room, watching sport and eating shit food as I tried to deal with the demons.
How dark did it get for you, mate?
I think I touched on it in the documentary that on at least two or three occasions, another minute and I wouldn't be here. And the way, you know, it's really hard. And In terms of detail, it's not good laying in the car with a hose connected to your exhaust pipe with photos of your family laying on your chest. And
fuck.
I look at that and go, I'm still here. So am I actually strong or am I weak? And I ask myself that question constantly because clearly people that don't get the opportunity to talk about it because they ended up going through with it.
Yep.
They can't ask themselves that question. I can, and I don't know what the answer is. I think it's that I'm strong because at the end of the day, in that last sort of pivotal 20, 30 seconds, the family thing just shone through, and that it was like someone slapped me in the face and said, "What the fuck are you doing?"
That's really powerful, and I say that from somebody who's a survivor of 3 major attempts in my life. I get it. I really do. I often ask the question, you know, why am I here? Why am I here right now having this conversation? You know, the father of 4 beautiful children, you know, the path I've walked when I, you know, my attempts have been extremely serious attempts that didn't fail from my fucking failing. They failed because it either jammed or someone cut me down. Like, without going into specifics and triggering anybody, and please, anybody, if you're feeling anything from this, make sure you reach out. There are people out there that will happily have a chat with you. So, and we'll give some information at the end of this. But, Mark, I get it. I really do, mate. And I don't believe that it's a strength. I don't believe it's a weakness. For me, I look at it as it's a meant to be. I'm meant to fucking be here. You're meant to be here.
Yeah, I got to that point where it was about questioning whether I wanted to be here too. And, you know, again, that's something I've never shared with anyone, but there were some serious moments on at least 2 or 3 occasions where one extra, probably minute longer, and you wouldn't be doing this interview with me.
Look, it was heartbreaking. You know, I could still cry about it now. Like, and then, sorry. And then I had to watch Dylan go through it as well, so, yeah.
I mean, I had those thoughts that you should never have. Like, I wanted to... Yeah, it's hard to talk about, to be honest.
Also, too, I mean, as I said, we'll touch on Sharon, if you don't mind. What an amazing, supportive partner. You know, you meet in a pub. She wasn't real sure. She's heading home, you know. She's off to the police force. And here's this, you know, pisshead fun guy fucking out there with his boys celebrate. Like, you know, you're a pretty good-looking cock back then. And Sharon, well, she's a beautiful-looking lady. Do you think it would have been different had Sharon not been your major support? I mean, with your mum, but as we all know, you know, our partners, you know, our mums or dads, you know, like, they know us, but your partner knows you, you know, like, you...
Well, they're with you 24/7 pretty much.
That's right.
At the end, they get to experience the highs and the lows with you, and, you know, we've been married 30 years, been together 32 or 3, whatever it is, but, oh, look, there's probably 10 occasions where she could have and should have packed her bags, and on a couple she basically did and left. But, you know, I think it's the country girl in her too. It's that whole thing about family.
So she's also country raised and same sort of morals.
She was
sort of
raised not far out of Horsham, as it turns out. So, again, country girl, good, strong country values, you know, that commitment to family and nothing's too hard to get through. And so, you know, I get to her credit because, man, like, I should, you talk about this being called the clink. I should have been in the fucking clink about 5 or 6 times.
Have you gotten to that point at times, Mark? And I know it's not probably something you've talked about.
Some of the shit I got up to in terms of the way I dealt with the demons was, if my kids told me that, I'd whack them myself, to be honest, right? And they deserve to be whacked for a lot of things. But if they did half of what I did dealing with the demons in that sort of mid-20s to early 30s period, I didn't go out without getting in the blue.
So you were angry. You were always feeling that anxiety or that anger.
What Sharon had to put up with at pubs and clubs and all that was, no one should have to put up with it.
Yeah.
And it was just, I couldn't control it. That's why, you know, alcohol And with the value of hindsight, you know, it was the worst thing that I could have been doing was touching it and using it.
Yep.
And never drank during the week ever, but a binge drinker on weekends, and you're out. And then some little thing would trigger your brain that you just wanted to fight someone. I would just look for a fight, and I wasn't happy unless I was in a fight.
I, for one, dealing with being sexually abused as a young person, carried a lot of anger and a lot of, you know, a lot of trauma, which was suppressed. And, you know, if I hit the piss, I was no different. You know, I had opportunities to play in the ARL back then. Mate, I had the talent, but I fucked up. My off-field antics cost me a lot of jail and a lot of time. And it was revolving around anger and suppression of emotion.
I cringe thinking about it, to be
absolutely
honest. It was just a such a bad period, and it's a life regret about behavior and how you know you used your anger and your emotion, regardless if it was built up or whatever, and how you chose to vent off steam. That's again, if someone told me my kids did that when they were growing up, 17, 18, 20, 20, I would be so embarrassed.
Yeah.
Mind you, Sharon was a cop at the time.
So I wasn't going to say much about that because, yes, I did see that in the documentary. And what an amazing woman, seriously. Like, it's not an easy job being a cop. And, look, I'm not going to say my grandfather was a cop. You know, I went down the wrong fucking path. So what? He was a Crown Sergeant for 35 years, you know what I mean? But he never once looked down on me. Sharon would obviously be going to work and holding a position within, you know, an authority of a law, and then sort of coming in home and dealing with a husband that's just completely shut off to the world and couldn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
How?
It was a really, really, really bad period. And it was a long, and, you know, again, we had kids growing up at this point too. So, you know, a parent's job is to actually be a role model.
Yeah.
100% of the time, yep. Right? But nothing's ever perfect. Get all that. Everyone needs to be realist around this, that, and the other. But, you know, for me, without medication, and then once, you know, that sort of medication side of things, Sharon pretty much said, if you don't do something about this, I'm out of here, right? So, you know, that all sort of helped flip it on its head around management of the issues, right? And that was about knowing and understanding what's right, what's wrong, what the triggers are, how do you avoid them, what do you need to do to get yourself through this? And
yep.
That's whether you stay on medication the rest of your life or whatever, I'm not going to judge anyone. You know, I challenged myself to transition to get off it just because that's what I wanted to do. It was one of my goals. So
I'm a man that lives with type 2 bipolar, spent 20 years medicated. Not medicated now, haven't been for over 6 years. Had I not taken the medication, I'd either be dead or doing life in jail. Simple as that. It just wasn't okay. And nor would I have been what I would call a role model for my children, a quality partner to my wife or a father. If that's what you've got to do to change your life, to better your life, to give yourself time to breathe, like you said, mate, it needs to be done.
Well, what you need to do is trust professionals, right? Professionals, they're people that deal with this shit every day, right? So I can't sit back and self-critique and think I've got the answers because the answers hadn't been working for a number of years.
Yes.
So when they're saying to me, this is what you need to do, because you've got to put your pants down and be totally honest around all of it. What is it? You know, your anger, aggression, fighting, whatever. And it was simple for them. This is what you need to do. So that was the first real tick in terms of acceptance, which is part of the challenge. And then it's about trying to find a resolution and get yourself through it. And that for me is, you know, in any discussion I have with people is a key part of advice around those, you know, those dark places that you get to and that you're in. Tomorrow can be a different day, right? And that's about taking the first steps of and doing something about it. And you know, my view is it never leaves. You know the triggers and you deal with it.
Yes.
And you avoid the triggers as best as you can.
Yes.
And you and it's just a completely different mental outlook on a situation.
To hear more from the Angry Dad, check out season 1, episode 8 of The Clink.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. For the record. Yeah. For the record. For the record. For the record. for the record.